Good morning, everybody. I'm so happy to see you here. I'm Karen Keenan. I'm an executive vice president at State Street. And this is so different from my normal day because I work in the capital markets area, and I can say that usually I'm looking out on a trading floor, and it's totally guys. So to look out and see this group of women, it's really, it's thrilling. State Street has 1,500 people here today, so I'm here with a ton of colleagues.
Nice.
And we're very, very proud to be the sponsor for the eighth year in a row of the Mass Conference for Women. And I'm thrilled because I got a call last night saying, could you please host Ritu Sharma? And I didn't know anything about Ritu, so I did have to do some research. And I'm going to be buying her book later, so I hope that you'll join me at that because she'll sign it for us. Ritu's the co-founder and president of Women Thrive Worldwide. She's a leading voice on women's issues in U.S. foreign policy. For 20 years, she's navigated Washington's politics and built the leading nonprofit organization that amplifies the voices of women and girls in developing countries with decision makers in the U.S. and at the global level. Think about that. What a verb to have next to your name, right? Amplifying. She's also the author of the book that we want to get to, Teach a Woman to Fish, Overcoming Poverty Around the World. President Jimmy Carter calls it a must-read. Teach a Woman to Fish shows how women are triumphing over the forces that threaten to keep them in poverty and how those in the United States and elsewhere can help. In other words, how those of us in this room can help. The book has really practical, real-life ideas of how we can help women in poverty around the world. So I'm really looking forward to the conversation on the panel. Join us.
Thank you. Thank you so much, and it's been an awesome morning, hasn't it? I love being here, so I'm so honored to be with you. Let me introduce our two panelists, and then I'm going to do a little poll so we can get a sense of who's in the room and what you want to get from this panel, most of all. So we have Christy Keswick, who's the COO of Good Sports. She's going to tell you a little bit about it, but it's a fabulous organization, working with kids to get them the things that they need to play with. I'll let her tell you the story. And Kimberly Vaughn is the chief marketing, and I love this, people officer of Suffolk Construction Company here in Boston, and they're also one of the sponsors of the conference. And Kim will talk a little bit about what you can do inside a corporation and as well as outside. So, first of all, how many of you are working in a corporation or you're in a business and you want to get your employer or your colleagues involved in a cause? Just raise your hand. How many of you are interested in doing that? Okay, so we've got about 25% of you are in that category. How many of you are interested in getting involved just personally, just yourself, on your own? All right, so we've got about half of you are in that bucket. And you can raise your hand twice. Don't worry, these are not mutually exclusive. And how many of you are thinking about actually starting your own thing, your own social enterprise? Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. So we've got about 25, and 50. So what I want to do is start us off on the second question. There's a lot of you here that you want to do something on your own. You want to get involved. Your heart is telling you, sort of pushing you to get out there, get engaged with the world. And our job in the next hour is going to be to give you 20 or 30 different ideas of how you can do that, with the hope that one or two of those will really be right for you. And that after you go home from this conference, you'll take that step to get more engaged in the world. So, Kimberly, I'm going to start with you in terms of how did you begin this journey of getting involved in a cause? Because it started with you. So tell us a little bit more about who you are and what you've done and what motivated you to do something a little bit crazy.
Okay. In some respects, the first crazy move I made was to go work for a construction company, not at all what I thought I would be doing after I graduated from college. And when I got there, I became inspired by a lot of what the company had done in the community. And it had, thankfully, I've been fortunate to be with colleagues, and I have a boss who's very committed to the community. And I personally started to get involved in some of the associations that the company had actually relationships with. So the Boys and Girls Club, as an example. But I think probably the most inspiring part and what really thrusted me into the community world inside the company was when, and this is an unusual model, but when the company and our CEO founded a nonprofit. And it was sparked by a Boston Globe article about kids, and Christy is going to be connected to this, kids who really did not have what they needed to play as athletes in the Boston public school system. So we formed a nonprofit called the Boston Scholar Athlete Program, where we helped inspire them to get out on the field, but we helped do that by getting them inspired in actually academics and support. And so it was really that that I think prompted a lot of then ancillary roads right. that I've taken.
So you can help my football player son?
Yes.
You can inspire him academically?
I can.
Great. I'm going to be calling you about that.
No problem.
So, Christy, you had a different pathway. You went from the corporate sector and then decided to take your skill set and bring it to the nonprofit sector. So tell us about that story.
Sure. You know, when I graduated from college, I was lucky enough to get a really interesting and great job in the management consulting world. And for 7 or 8 years, I really enjoyed helping businesses try to solve some of their issues. Felt like it really gave me a great platform. But at the end of the day, I felt like I could really be using my skills in a greater way to do something for the greater good. And I took a path that I don't necessarily encourage everybody to do. But I quit that job and I started up a nonprofit. And it was hard. It was really hard. But I really felt like I had the skills to help make it successful. And fundamentally, I thought it was a good idea. And I thought if I could take those two things and run with it, and believe me, there was a team of people that helped, that we could really do great things.
Mm-hmm. And tell us the core of that idea.
Absolutely. So our nonprofit is called Good Sports, and we fundamentally believe that all kids should have the opportunity to get involved in sports and fitness activities because of the lifelong benefits that go along with it. And so what we found was that sports equipment is actually the biggest part of a nonprofit budget. When it comes to playing sports. And so we said, let's go after the industry that has the equipment. And so we went after the Nikes of the world and the Reeboks, and we were lucky when we were starting that we had several of those in our backyard. We are now a national organization, but we started here in the Boston market. And we piloted it. We said, what if we take your equipment and we distribute it to kids that really need it? And they said, we think that's a great idea because sports participation is declining. It's a long-term business issue for us. And we don't have the capacity or resources to do this well, and you do. Mm-hmm. And so the model and the pilot and the test worked. And we knew if it worked here in the Boston market in Massachusetts that it was a model that we could scale nationally. Mm-hmm. And so fast forward 10 years, we are doing that on a national level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Thank you.
Really fantastic. And for both of you, Kimberly, you can start. Imagine that you're in the situation that a lot of the people in this room are in, where they're thinking about it, ready to do something. What are some of the first steps that people can take to get engaged, either with what their company is doing or with something else out in the community?
So I would say, I mean, inside, I think the good news about today and about the newer generation that is coming into the workforce is the trend in terms of companies engaging in the community has skyrocketed. And I give a lot of credit to our millennial generation because I think they've brought that to the forefront in a way that hasn't been before. So I think we're fortunate for people in this room who work at companies. There's a lot that companies are doing now, a lot more than, frankly, had been done 5-10 years ago. We encourage, at Suffolk, and I encourage most of the women who work there, you know, start there. Because if you're with a company and you're enjoying your job, most likely You're going to love to connect with people inside the company in a different way. So if you're out taking advantage of a volunteer opportunity and you're suddenly next to, you know, anybody inside the organization that you might not meet in that way, mm-hmm. it's of huge benefit. Mm-hmm. So we look inside Suffolk a lot, and I think we try to encourage folks to take advantage of events. The other thing that was really good for me personally when I started at Suffolk is I volunteered on committees quite a bit, on nonprofit committees, where it was a foot in the door and they were willing and very thankful to have the help. So with my background, I joined, you know, the marketing committee as an example on a couple of organizations. And that was a great way to connect with those people. And frankly, from there, I ended up in two instances moving through and becoming a member of the board.
Mm-hmm. Great. So ideas one and two. We've got volunteer with your corporate-sponsored nonprofit program, or get on committees. And I tell you what, we women, we love committee work. I'll tell you that. Just based on church and school and work. So that's two great entrees.
And so, Christy, what do you think?
I think you can approach it a couple of different ways. I would encourage everybody in the room to kind of take a step back and think about, everybody in this room probably has a full plate. Mm-hmm. Am I correct?
No.
So I applaud you for being here, because you basically just signed up to do something else, which is amazing. And that's sort of how the world works, and it's fantastic. However, in order for you to do something that's going to be fulfilling to you, you really need to think about what your motivation is. What motivates you? You know, are there causes out there that for personal reasons are very close to you? And if they are, I would highly encourage you to start there. You know, was sports really important to you growing up? Or did you have somebody in your family close to you that had cancer, and therefore that is something that's very important to you? Because at the end of the day, it's going to be your passion for whatever you're doing that's going to keep you doing it, and make sure that you're finding time to do it well. So I would encourage you to do that. And it also may, your passion may be sort of not about the mission so much, but it might be, for example, you know, you're a lawyer and you like your job, but you want to make sure that you're using your skills, your professional skills, to apply it to somebody who can't afford those billings. So you might want to look for specific opportunities, you know, that are around your particular skill set. So once you've figured that out, and I highly recommend you do that as a first step, then the second part is, how do you find it? And there's so many nonprofits out there nationally and right in our own backyard. I would actually say that you have right at your fingertips how to find it. Social media is a fantastic way. I would definitely encourage Facebook and LinkedIn. Once you've figured out what you want to do, whether it's giving legal advice to an organization or it's a particular type of nonprofit, ask your network. Ask your network who's been involved in organizations such as this. And you'll be amazed at the response that you get. And then I'd also recommend a couple of resources online. Charity Navigator and Better Business Bureau Giving, I think it's called, are both accreditation sites for nonprofits. And I think that's where you can really, they have a good search function, so you can hopefully narrow things down. But it also is going to direct you to, for the most part, I believe, organizations that are very transparent in what they do, which is ultimately a good sign of a nonprofit. And I think it will help lead you in the direction of finding a good opportunity. And then a third, I would say you guys have to be really honest about what time commitment you can provide, what skills and resources you have, because ultimately, from a nonprofit perspective, those are the types of people that we're looking for. If you can't follow through, ultimately ends up taking resources away from a nonprofit, which obviously is why nobody, you know, no one here is looking to do that. So I would recommend sort of taking a step back before you look at specific opportunities and think about what you're going to get out of it. You know, from our perspective, I can give you a few examples of how we get volunteers involved. We look at it from a spectrum perspective. So we know not everybody has the ability to be deeply involved and give tons of time. And if you look at it from a who is giving the most amount of time in our organization, it's probably our board of directors, because the board of directors is highly involved in the organization from a strategy perspective, from a fundraising perspective, plus a small group of people. And then throughout the year, we have different opportunities. So we host a gala every year, and we bring together a committee, but it's for a four-month period. So it's intense during that time, but it's also not something that you have to do all year long. We also have a young professionals board, so we're trying to target some of those up-and-coming professionals, many of which, you know, are here today. We also have something we're creating online where we have an influencer group where we're looking for people that are very savvy on the social media side to help us spread the word about Good Sports, because as a nonprofit, your marketing investments are limited. So you have to think of creative and grassroots ways to get involved. So those are just some of the examples, but there's a ton of ways to get involved. I mean, not just from our perspective, but if you think about ongoing opportunities, you think about food banks and soup kitchens. I mean, there's ways you can get involved on a monthly basis or on a project basis or something that's very skill-oriented based on your particular interests. So I think there's a lot of ways, but it does take some thought initially. And then lastly, I would just say, once you've figured all that out, make sure the nonprofit has done its job in setting the expectations about the role that you're going to be involved in, because otherwise it's not going to be a good experience for you. And it's a two-way street. You know, your time is valuable too. And so just make sure that they're very clear to you about what those expectations are.
Great. This is excellent. So we've got get clear on what your motivation is and what your passion is. You know, what do you really want to get out of this? Think about your skill set and how you can apply that to a nonprofit. Just to add a few more layers to that, a lot of nonprofits, like Women Thrive, have needs in particular skill areas like legal services, graphic design, social media, straight marketing, things like that. And so it's very helpful to approach a nonprofit and to say, and we get calls like this all the time. Hi, you know, I run a PR firm, and I'd like to donate 8 hours of services to your nonprofit. So that's absolutely something that you can do. And I also want to underline what Christy said about being clear about how much time you have. It is helpful to tell the nonprofit, this is how much time I have to give. And then make sure that your role is clear, what product you're going to deliver is very clear. And be cognizant that it does take quite a bit of time with the nonprofit. For example, if you're doing branding work with the nonprofit, it takes a lot of the senior team's time to go through a branding process with you, even if you're doing it pro bono. So great ideas, great resources. Kim, in terms of, you know, how people can maybe take that next step for those folks in the room that are interested in getting their corporation involved, how would you go about that? You just walk into the CEO's office and say, hey, I have this great idea, or what's the pathway to do that kind of thing?
Well, I think there's probably two different pathways. I think one, which is obviously harder to plan for, but I think it requires you to constantly be talking about it, is to have it happen organically, which can happen. And we have, as an example of that, a really great nonprofit that is employee-driven and employee-run within our company. And so that has been very much an organic process. And what's happened there is it's called the Giving Circle, and employees have created this, and literally our CEO cannot decide where the money is going to go. Mm-hmm. The employees have their own board, and they've gotten involved, and the only component of the mission that connects it to Suffolk is that it's geared toward family and friends of Suffolk employees. And that's been much more of an organic spirit that has spread through the company. And, you know, we just last month had corporate meetings throughout the country, and in each one, we had an employee stand up and give such a personal story of how the Giving Circle had helped them. You know, whether it be someone in their family who had cancer and the Giving Circle had paid for hospital stays for the family. But that ends up, and the reason I share it in detail is because that has spread and become such a fabric, such an important part of the fabric of the company, and that's truly been because it's just genuine spirit behind it. And what's made that expand to the level that it has is the storytelling around it and the internal promoting about it. And that, to me, is really important that everybody in this room can do in terms of talking about the importance of it. So that is an organic way, obviously. And then I think the other path is a little bit more planned. And my experience in the companies that I've worked for is I do think it's not necessarily marching into the CEO's office, but I do think that it's important, and I would consider it an obligation for people who are employees to talk to their supervisors, about the need for companies to get engaged. And, you know, I had said before, we were looking at some statistics last night around this millennial generation. I think it was that 50%, according to a recent study, really choose, you know, where they work based on whether or not the company's involved in a, you know, social, has kind of a social commitment behind it. And then of that same group, 68% wanted to see their companies do more. So I do think that it is incumbent upon everybody in the room, whether it be organically talking about things that happen and encouraging community and social involvement. But I also think going up and asking with your supervisor, with colleagues, you know, how can the company get engaged? Because people, it's been brought to the attention of corporations so much in the last 10 years, and they're ready for the expectation. Mm-hmm. And so I think everyone in this room can help drive that.
Yeah, that's great. And one of the, I think there's a gem hidden in there as well. One of the things I talk to people a lot around the country is how you can find your power and your voice and lean into that in this nonprofit cause space first and practice there and get comfortable with it. And then you can start, you know, leaning in your workplace where there is more risk attached to that. So, for example, you know, taking that step to talk to your supervisor and organize an event, organize a circle, is a great leadership opportunity for you to sort of stand out in your company. But it's also relatively low risk in the scheme of things, so it can be a great way to get out there.
I would just add to that, please. On the corporate side, we get a lot of corporate funding as an organization, and almost every corporation that we work with has an employee engagement component that is part of the partnership that we have to have. And so I do think it's relatively low risk to speak up about this on a corporate level, because I think the people that are running these programs really want to know what their employees want to do. And I do think that the nonprofits are coming up with really unique ways to get large groups involved and also get employees involved on a more a smaller scale on an individual level. So I definitely encourage you to do that.
And before we move to starting your own social enterprise, I want to talk about a couple of really fun things that are in the book, Teach a Woman to Fish, that you can do locally. You can do them every day if you want, that will really have a big impact globally. And one is really simple. It's just buying fair trade, right? You look for the fair trade symbol on, it's now on sugar, tea, coffee, clothing, all kinds of different products. Some vegetables now you can find in the vegetable section. But it's that simple. It costs a few cents more, sometimes a few dollars more, but I can tell you from having visited women on the ground that are participating in these projects where they're actually getting a fair price for their product, it is completely transformative and very empowering for them. So when you see that little fair trade label, I want you to know that many people around the world have gone, they've seen it, they've tested it, they've made sure that that fair trade label stands for something real. The other thing you can do, and this is a really fun one, you could do this during your Christmas shopping. Go into whatever store it is. It could be TJ Maxx, it could be Bed Bath & Beyond, it could be, you know, Cartier, I don't know, wherever you shop. And ask them, hey, do you have a sweatshop policy? And the associate on the floor may look at you like, what are you talking about? And you can say, well, you know, it's this policy that just says that where your products are made, people are paid well and they're treated well. I'm just curious if you have a policy like that. If they do, the associate will usually say, yeah, we do. It's on our website. You can go here and see it. A really great thing to say back is, you know, I'd really like to see that displayed in your store.
That feedback loop. Corporations, and some of you who are in retail, I think, will know this, are very sensitive to the consumer's behavior at the point of sale, right? People demonstrating outside against Nike or against the Gap, you know, that can have an impact, but the real impact comes when you're about to buy their good and you say, hey, I really care about this. And if they say they don't have one, you can say, look, I think it's a great thing for your company to do. Please tell your manager that I asked. You've got to end with that kicker. Please tell your manager I asked. And then it goes up the food chain. And I have had some of the best conversations with people in Pier 1 or in Bed Bath & Beyond, like everything comes from China, and they look like a deer in the headlights when you ask about the sweatshop policy. But people are really thirsty, and they're really ready to hear about it, and they want to know what you think. So two really easy things that you can do that make a really big difference. So in terms of, Christy, the people who want to go out there and start their own thing like you did.
Yeah.
What kinds of things do you think they should think about? You know, what should a business plan for a nonprofit, for example, what should that look like?
It shouldn't look any different than any business plan for any business. Nonprofits are businesses. People sometimes judge them differently, but they're not. I mean, obviously, at the end of the day, the profit, it looks differently. It's a different outcome. But you have all the same issues. First of all, you have to start with a good idea. You have to have good management. You need to have a good operational plan. You need to have a plan for funding. You need to have an HR plan for long-term growth. You need to have understanding for starting up offices and legal and tax implications. There's really nothing different from a business plan perspective for a nonprofit than for a for-profit. And I think it's really, you need to go into that with eyes wide open, because it's hard. And it's hard. And it's also very hard to get off the ground, because you're selling something that hasn't been proven yet. And so it's a little bit of a give and take. We thought we had a great idea, and I think we do. However, it didn't have a track record yet. It didn't have a proven model that, even though it's a great idea, can this team of people actually execute it? And so we thought, okay, we can get some funding to kind of fund this for a while. Well, the reality is we couldn't. We actually had to prove the model first, and then the funding came. So it was a huge sacrifice, because there was two of us basically at the start of this organization that worked unpaid for a year in order to get this off of the ground and be able to attract the kind of people who wanted to invest in it. And it makes sense. You know, foundations, corporations, even individuals, they want to make sure that they're making a good investment. So they do want to see a track record. So you have to be prepared for that piece of it. And then I would just say that you need a group of advisors around you that are very strong and have done something like this before, because you're going to come up against roadblocks and things you've never seen, and you need somebody to be able to bounce some of these things off of. So surround yourself by super smart, super motivated, super passionate people, and it will help you get there faster.
Yeah. I call those people my kitchen cabinet.
Yeah.
They are so, so vital. So we're going to go to questions and answers sooner than later, because I hate it when you wait till the end and then everybody has to ask a question. Before we do that, though, I just want to let you know that about 5 minutes before this session ends, I have to hightail it from here down to the exhibit hall for the book signing, which I hope you'll come and visit and learn more about Women Thrive and what you can do. But I just want to let you know that. So Christy and Kim are going to finish out the session, and please don't be alarmed when I zip out the door. So if you want to line up, we've got three microphones. We'll take three questions at a time and then just go from there. So there are microphones. You need to approach a microphone and line up. And please say your name and where you're from or which company you're with, so we all know who you are. So we're going to take one here and then one here. And if no one shows up over there, we'll take another one.
Okay, great.
So go ahead.
Hi, my name is Sarah, and this question speaks to those who are sort of on the other side. So I'm a director of development for an NGO that focuses on sex trafficking, and particularly protecting children from being commercially sexually exploited here in the United States. So, and we're ECPAT USA. If anyone wants to write that down, it's ECPAT USA. We've been around since the early 90s. So I think this issue speaks to women personally, and I'm really wondering, what are some specific strategies to get on the corporate radar and also to engage employees that really want to work on this issue? It's getting so much more attention, and I know that there are corporations that if they just knew about us would really be interested in supporting our work.
Great. Excellent, excellent question. Yes, please.
Hi, my name is Rebecca Obunu, and I am here with MIT Sloan today. But I'm actually here because of my personal interests. I work full-time at MIT, but on the side, I run a nonprofit that I started several years ago. And what we do is we work with entrepreneurs in rural parts of Haiti. I lived in a rural part of Haiti after being born here, and my parents brought me back. And I noticed that people really wanted jobs more than they wanted handouts, so that's what led to me starting this nonprofit. However, I work full-time, and
and you have three kids, right? And you're getting an MBA.
Well, not yet, but I am pursuing an MBA part-time, which is a lot. And I want to see, like, we've made some good progress, but I really think we have something that can really change what Haiti looks like, especially outside of the large cities. And I just want your advice on how do you get your name out there on a very large scale? And then also, you talked about your advisors. How did you go about getting your kitchen folks?
Great, great questions. Please.
Hi, my name is Ortal. I work for a global health development or nonprofit here in Boston, and I manage teams of volunteers. And you talked about being honest as a volunteer, being honest about how much time you have, and that if you are not, sometimes you end up drawing away resources from the nonprofit instead of helping them. And I'm dealing with that right now with a lot of volunteers who some teams are just more committed than others, and it's a struggle to choose between really wanting to bring these volunteers who may have it in their hearts that they do want to help, keeping them on board with the mission and letting them be part of our movement versus wanting to just sort of say, hey, we appreciate it, but we can't work with you anymore. So how do you manage volunteers who don't always step up to the plate but still keep them in good faith?
Yeah, great, great question. So any of you want to start on any of those?
I can start on that one because it's fresh in my head. I think at the end of the day, you have to understand that what you're doing is for some greater good. And getting people involved and people who can help the organization and helping take them to the next level about in terms of what they can do for you is a fantastic thing. But there's going to become a point where you have to let loose people who aren't helpful. And you can
let them loose.
Gotcha. And like you said, I'm sure they got involved for all the right reasons, but they're no longer being helpful to your cause. So I think, just trying to, how you can help yourself initially is like what I said about setting expectations. So for us, we have things in place like clear sets of expectations in terms of what we need volunteers to do, the time commitment. We give dates way ahead of time whenever we can, so people can make a decision about whether or not that they can be involved. But you're not doing anything wrong. It happens in every scenario. You get 80% of those people to help you, and they do what they said they're going to do, and 20% don't. And you just have to figure out a way to move on. So if you're in the middle of a project or something like that, what I would suggest is you finish it, but next year you don't ask them to re-engage. And that's what I do all the time. I mean, look at the people that have been really helpful. I mean, I only have so many hours in the day, and I need people on my team that can really help. So I would encourage you to do it, obviously to do it in a way that's professional and that you're not burning any bridges, but it's okay to let people go.
I'll say, this connects to a couple of the questions that were asked. I do think as a company, as a corporation, what is really important for any nonprofit, but in terms of getting corporate support and engagement, is to really be thoughtful about how you're measuring impact. I think Christy was right in making the absolute parallel between a business plan and a plan for a nonprofit. And one of the things that I think is really difficult to do is to A, pick the right measurements that you're going to use, and B, to be really disciplined about it. Especially if you're in a startup mode. I think part of what can happen in the fury of getting a nonprofit up and running is that you could, it takes a real amount of discipline up front in the midst of the chaos to be very deliberate and say, okay, if we are going to measure something for the next 5 years, because as a company, if you can show high impact 2 years in, 3 years in, that's huge in terms of, you know, where we would want to put dollars, where we would want to put volunteers. But it's really challenging to do that and get that right up front. So I would even suggest going to, you know, advisors, like Christy mentioned, consultants that do this for businesses, you know, determine key performance indicators. And the more that you can be very diligent upfront about it, to me, that is what is most compelling if we're sitting down with a nonprofit to figure out if we're going to give, you know, dollars or support to.
Mm-hmm. Great. And just to add a few things on these questions, sort of how do you find that kitchen cabinet? I think it needs to grow organically, and I would say the same thing about finding a mentor. Now, it doesn't really work real well when you ask somebody that you don't know so much, hey, will you be my mentor? But someone that you've worked with or someone that has maybe been a vendor for you in one way or another, and you really like them, they can become an advisor. So, you know, look around who's in your world, who's in your inner circle, and then that next circle out, and just begin collecting them. And it does take a long time. It can take years to sort of put it together, and don't be daunted like that. And then there's the publicity. I think both of you were sort of asking about, how do I publicize my nonprofit? How do we attract more donors and supporters? And that is, of course, the million-dollar question. And what I would say, and what we have found at our organization, is just very basic marketing principles. Segment, 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 which is don't try to appeal to a broad audience. Don't try to just blast out social media and think that people are going to come your way. You've got to be really disciplined about figuring out who's most likely to support your mission, and then really go after those people in a very thoughtful, sort of relentless way. So especially the smaller your nonprofit is, the more you have to segment. That would be the best advice I think you can give. So we're going to take another question.
Just a follow-up to her question on the corporates.
Yes.
Do you guys have any corporates that you're currently working with?
Yes, we actually work with some really big names, because we train travel industry staff to recognize victims of trafficking so they can report it. So we work with Delta, Carlson, Wyndham, and Hilton.
Fantastic.
But we're trying to, you know, turn our corporate connections into financial support.
So I would say that those are your biggest assets. Mm-hmm. If you want to open doors to additional corporations, that's what you want to do. You want to talk about the case studies in which you have already worked with these big corporations to open doors to new ones. I mean, that's the reality, is people want to know that other people have done this first. And that's why it's so hard to start these things up. And if you already have names and brand names that people recognize, that's your asset.
Thank you.
And great advice. Sorry, one other piece on that, as we're all thinking about things as people answer. The other thing is, there's obviously a lot of value that a corporation can bring to a nonprofit. There's a lot of value that a nonprofit can bring to a corporation as well, and I think sometimes we forget to, you know, put the other hat on. You know, value that a nonprofit can bring to us is around employee engagement. It can specifically be opportunities for young, you know, people in the workforce to get involved in a committee, to get onto a board. I mean, part of what we encourage as a company is that people play a role in the community. And I have a lot of people saying, how can I get onto the board? You know, if you are able to formalize that partnership and offer some opportunities that a company is going to find very helpful for their employees, I think they'd be more willing to jump in. So don't don't shy away from saying, okay, what is it that I'm going to give to a company? Because you can give a lot.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Great. All right. Thank
Great.
You.
Let's go to some other questions.
Hi. Thank you all so much for being here. I'm Alex. I work on the corporate side. This is more of a question in the Suffolk world, I think. So I work currently in CSR, corporate social responsibility, and we find that our employees are really eager to get engaged, but you know, on the corporate side, there's only so many dollars to give. How do I approach senior leadership to say this is actually not only going to help our employees but contribute to our bottom line? What do you have in terms of advice there?
Great question. We're going to take a few more.
Sorry.
Yes.
Hello, my name is Consuelo, and I am originally from Peru. And my question is basically in terms of fair trading. I know that here in the United States we do a good job asking and making sure that the labels are fair trade. But how can we make sure also that back home in our countries they make sure that they are trying to bring the products here to the United States? And unfortunately, back home, people don't have access to the same products that are being coming to this country. Like, for example, let's say in Peru, we are the big producers of quinoa. Everybody knows that it's a big, and they try to make it organic. And unfortunately, the products come to United States organically. And if you want to eat healthy down there, you don't have another choice because that will be sell at $30 a pound, and the ones that had all the chemicals are only $3. So you are in the, you know, you want to eat healthy, but you have no other choice. While the products are coming here, and you have the opportunity to become healthier because of the pesticides. So as a consumers, how can we make sure that we also make sure that back home or down the countries that are exporting the products are accountable of paying the real price, the fair price?
So let me make sure I understand your question. Is the question how do we make sure that for the products that are coming to the U.S. from other countries, mm-hmm. that the people that are growing those are being paid a fair price?
Yes.
Okay, got it. Great, thank you. Good question.
Hi, I'm Annika, and I'm a high school student, and I'm interested in possibly pursuing a career in a nonprofit, and I'm just wondering, like, what are the steps I should take to get a career in that field? Like, if there's a specific major or certain skills that I could acquire that would help, and basically just how to get a foot in the door.
Yeah, great questions. Okay, you're ready to go on the first one.
Only because it was very specific. I would say, two things first. I think there's as big of an argument for employee, kind of attracting employees, as there is for profitability, especially in today's economy. So from a business standpoint, that is something that I think is becoming a more and more compelling argument. If you can demonstrate that the programs that you have in place and the CSR department and everything that you do within is actually inviting the right people into work and attracting, now, as I said, you know, with some of the statistics before, the millennial generation, that is a hard generation to capture and engage and get them to stay. So while it's not profitable, while it's not direct profitability, I think that's just as important. When it comes to profitability, I would tell you that the experience that we've had at Suffolk is, if you get the company engaged and you also get your senior leadership engaged in the community, you're never going to be able to make an absolute direct correlation, but the network that builds through the boards and through the community relationships that people inside the company wouldn't normally otherwise exercise is a network that leads to new business. And it frequently is examples of, you know, people who've developed a relationship through a nonprofit, through a community, you know, activity. And it becomes a connection that they wouldn't have otherwise made. And if it really gets going, then the network that you can create, I truly believe, will lead to new business.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do you want to answer any of these or all of them?
I cannot answer that one.
I think I can't do that one.
We're all stumped.
You know, I would say that, like I said before, I think being involved in a nonprofit It's really no different than any other business. So I think having some business, taking some business classes and having some background on operations and finance and entrepreneurship, because I think almost every nonprofit I know is you know, works in that kind of mode. But I don't know that you need to do anything special or specific from a classroom perspective. I think being passionate about something and then being smart. You know, when I look to hire people, I to me it doesn't matter what their major was or what school they went to. I want to know if they're smart. Can they help me solve problems? And that's what I look for in a hire. And so if you can think about your education and not just from a school perspective, but in your experiences and volunteerism from that perspective, that's what we're looking for. We need more problem solvers, I think, generally in the world. But certainly from a nonprofit perspective, that's you're always going to find nonprofits have fewer resources than they have demand. And so we need people who are smart and are willing to take on multiple roles. And because of that, you can advance quickly. Because if you show your capabilities at a young age, you can advance quickly through a nonprofit if you're smart and you're a problem solver.
Yeah. Great answer. The other thing I would say is go try things out. You know, you may have an interest in a certain type of nonprofit. Go and volunteer, spend some days there, because you may find that it's not the right fit for you. And that's really valuable information. And if one type of nonprofit is not the right fit, don't despair. Try something else. But learning, especially at your stage, what you don't want to do is equally as valuable as figuring out what you do want to do. All right, on the trade issue, there's a couple of things that we can do, but I'll go back to the suggestion that I made. It's the power is in our hands as consumers to ask those questions, right? So you can literally go into Safeway and say, do you have a fair trade policy for your produce? It's as simple as that. And again, the guy stacking the carrots is going to look at you like, what? Tell your manager I asked. No, so there are other things going on with a lot of intricate trade agreements, and Women Thrive does actually engage in those on behalf of poor women. But I really believe where the change is going to come is through what we women decide what we buy and what we don't buy. So if you really want to know if they've been paid well, you need to look for the fair trade label, because that's a guarantee. Otherwise, you don't know. So, all right, I am going to bid adieu and run down to the exhibit hall, and Kim and Christy are going to finish out the session and take the last set of questions. Thank you all very much. This was fantastic. Okay. We have two more. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much. This has been an incredibly informative session. And I don't know if this is the best place to ask this question. But I was wondering, like, what if your employer or the business you work for, you know, is engaged in practices that aren't necessarily reflective of your social values? Like, say, they're involved in a practice or, you know, in selling a product that is harmful to the environment or harmful to human health, you know. How do you kind of approach that in a way that's effective and productive, doesn't get you fired? For instance, I was working, you know, for Panera for a long time, and they do a lot of great social cause branding. They have the lovely Panera Cares Cafe. They don't pay their employees a living wage, so while they want their employees to be really aware of things like food insecurity and so on and so forth, I'm like, I'm on food stamps and I work for you, and you're not, you know, addressing that issue. So I was wondering if there is a way to, like, have that dialogue productively.
I mean, that's a tough question. My best answer, I think, would be that if there are practices that are questionable morally, ethically, legally, I think it's really important that you talk to your HR, whatever it be, you know, your HR. We have business partners inside our company. Because frankly, if there's something going on that shouldn't, they should know about it. And it shouldn't be your responsibility to raise it up. That's what you have an HR team typically for. If it's something that culturally is not a fit, you know, or doesn't align with your stance or your opinions, in some respects, I think that needs to be a signal to you that maybe it's not culturally where you should be. And, you know, that's probably not the answer that you want to hear, but I do think that you have to, I believe that you need to love where you work, and you need to love what it stands for, because I think we all spend way too much time at a company if that's not the case, I think it's difficult. So I think if it's serious in nature, I would raise it with your HR team. And if it's personal, it might not be the right choice. So I would start looking around and you know, seeing if there's a company that better aligns with you, because I think you need to feel comfortable with yourself and the culture that the company has.
Thank you.
Great.
We have our last question.
Last but not least.
Two more questions.
Okay, so not last. Good. My name's Gail Ahlers, and my company is Ahlers Designs, and my mission is to make art create joy and empower people. In July, I turned half my studio, which is a fairly large space, into a place I'm calling the Empowerment Factory. And it's off to a start, and it's really fabulous, the Empowerment Factory creating smarter, happier, more empowered people. So it's not just one topic. It can be lots of things, from silliness to LinkedIn to whatever. I'm at a point where I'm trying to decide if I need to make it a nonprofit instead of just having it be part of Ahlers Designs. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm going to lean on you.
Are you seeking external donations to support it?
Yes, I am.
Then it'll need, I mean, if you really want to drive fundraising, people are going to want to donate to organizations that have a 501c3 status, because they're going to want that tax deduction, and they're going to want that as part of their overall giving strategy. Not everybody, but most. Your family will probably still give to you. But. That being said, it's a big undertaking.
Yes, yes.
Legally, you know, just, you know, even if you keep it simple, it's a big undertaking. So I would think thoroughly through what you're trying to accomplish and what you really, you know, need that status for, because it's a big step. Yeah. And there may be an interim step for you before you take on something like that. It's going to be like taking on a second business.
It is taking on a second business. It is, yeah.
So I would just say think thoroughly through that. And if you feel like you have the driving factors that are really requiring that, then I would encourage you to take that step. But I would really think through that first.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now our last question.
Last question. My name is Susie. I'm a technology trainer at a small pharmaceutical company, and I'm also a full-time student at Boston University. What I'm looking to do, my ideal goal, is to actually start a school that's very different from the institutions and school systems that we're used to. And the reason I'm looking for that is I just feel as though, based on my experience, my life, and my interactions with life, I'm trying to build and hopefully raise a society or have an impact on society that is not only just textbook, sit in a classroom, learn things, but actually incorporate life and life experience and interaction and working with people, whether it's with nonprofits or learning from your grandparents or whatever it might be, and not have it just be, you know, this 7:30 to 2 o'clock or 8 to 2 school system. And I'm not really sure where to start with this. I've come up with an idea. I've done a business plan in my school of working with teenagers, but I feel like it starts with younger people in trying to raise or build not just bookmark people, but put ethics back into it and learn how to just work with other people and not do things just for the sake of money or things like that, but just raising goodness is really what I'm after. And I've thought of charter schools, I've thought of other business ideas of just starting a little local place with experiential learning. I have this vision in my head, but I don't know how to even begin to make that a reality. I feel like it's just so big that I need to bring it down, and I'm not sure how to bring it down and where to begin to bring it down.
That is big. But it doesn't mean it's not a good idea. What I would suggest, or, you know, not knowing the full context of what you're trying to accomplish, I would suggest two things. I would look around and see if anybody, not just here in Massachusetts, but nationally, is doing anything that looks similar, right. Even parts of it, if somebody's doing it well and if they're successful. Because I really think that sometimes we reinvent the wheels too much, and we can really learn from other people that have tried other things. So that would be my first suggestion. My second suggestion would be, like, yes, dial it down. How can you pilot something with some of the components that you're talking about and essentially test it as a pilot? And learn from that before you talk about taking on... I mean, the school systems are very complex.
Very.
So it's a tough thing to go up against and try to compete with. But it doesn't mean that you might not come up with an idea which then could be integrated into a public school system. It may not be initially kind of what you're hoping for, but it might be your pathway to get there. So that's my two suggestions.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I would do a little bit of research out there to see if there are some organizations that are touching on the fringes of what, you know, you're inspired by, to see if that might be a starting point.
Okay.
Good
Thank
luck.
You.
Very commendable what you're trying to do, definitely. I think our time is up.
Yes.
If anybody wants to talk particularly about starting up a nonprofit, I am at the next local leader meetup.
Thanks, everybody. Hour.